opinion and your research, why would any university president want to...
They all fight it, and they're all ignored.
Okay.
At least at the state level. I mean, Florida is going to approve it next, and their regents have said no. And the head of the Texas system said no, and he was ignored. So they're ignoring the will of the administrators and the professors. A lot of the will seems to be coming from student groups, although I think still most students are against it. So that's the short answer.
Yeah, and so when there's a tragic episode that is going to happen somewhere in the future, it's then the university that will be responsible for that, or...
What do you mean, if they don't allow it?
No, when it is allowed, when or if guns are allowed on campuses, who's going to be answering to that, the NRA? I mean, when the university pushes back and the presidents push back and they say, we don't want this, we don't allow that, are they coming together to try to form policy around what we're saying no, but what if something happens?
I haven't heard much. I mean, I know that, like... If I looked more closely at what they're doing in Texas, at there are specific provisions about where you can carry guns on campus and where. You know, like, well, if you can have them in the classroom and dorm room, then it's all kind of moot. But like Oregon, some states have it. You can carry them in your car. I mean, that's the only kind of collaboration I've heard of. I don't know that I've heard anything else beyond that. I mean, I think they're allowing certain professors, as their prerogative, to say, no guns in my classroom. I think they're going to permit that. But that's, I don't know, that's the best I can answer.
Thank you very much for your talk. Sure. I like how you are trying to dig into some of the, at least stated, principles that they're after. But I wonder if, what you said at the very end kind of seemed to me to be a pivot point for the whole talk and maybe the project is the sort of there's the principled reason based on ideals that's frequently run through lobbying groups and the kind of primary things you started with about defense against tyranny and things like that. But it seems to me that the overwhelming majority of the reason people want guns is for personal safety. And so, while it's true that these big arguments about freedom are made, it's really about freedom and security for individuals. And so, you can't shake that. I mean, for that approach, the more violence there is in society, the more you want a gun. It's not paradoxical. It's a direct line. Sure. It's like nobody else will protect me, and so I owe it to my family.
Yeah, I know. You hear that all the time.
To protect ourselves, right? And it's not really irrational. It's maybe destructive and dangerous.
It's not irrational.
But it's not irrational or crazy. And a lot of the sort of language of gun opponents has been how, we're crazy.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, the the way to move forward is in conversations about the common good or about neighborliness, or about police violence, or about whatever. It's a long game to do it that way, of course. And some people will never feel safe because they don't want to feel safe by other people, right? But there really is a large percentage of people out there who are led to feel unsafe.
Sure.
And if the campaign is about ending that feeling or making people feel safer or whatever the proper way is, you look at a movie like Bowling for Columbine, which talks about the media, generation of fear and such.
Sure.
You work on that angle and you work on the actual real security issues around, and maybe that's the path forward that most Americans would feel attuned to, as opposed to trying to show some of the obvious ideas that we can't prove that a couple guys with guns in Idaho aren't gonna protect against the kind of tyranny that will take over our country.
Sure. No, I mean, I think, a couple points I would say is, first of all, I think a lot of these political arguments are dressing up. You know, they're trying to ennoble something more basic and less noble.
Yeah.
Max and I were talking beforehand. There's a clip of a comedian circulating on the web. His name is Jim Jefferies, Australian comedian. He says, "Look, I think really it's just Americans. You all just like guns. That's it, right? You just like them. Just say it."
Yeah.
And we're probably somewhere in between there. I think the right to self-defense probably it is it. Actually, if you ask gun owners, they mostly say that. They would say, why is the reason you have guns? Because of self-defense. I think, you know, Wayne LaPierre, after the Sandy Hook shooting, he came out, he gave a big speech, and he said, you know, the American media is to blame because they fill the minds of our sick killers with all kinds of ideas. They give them inspiration. He mentioned American Psycho and, I don't know, they were old movies. It was weird. And I said, well, he's right to blame the media, but his blame is wrong. The problem is actually more what you were talking about, the way they drive up our fear. And in the first chapter of my book, I talk about the culture of fear that is there. The NRA doesn't have to do much. Wayne LaPierre doesn't need to spin up these giant speeches where he mentions earthquakes for whatever reason. That's another reason we should be armed. The plague. He talks about 18th century diseases coming back. I'm serious. You know, you don't need to go there. You just need to watch TV. You just need to watch the news. There's plenty of reason for people to be afraid. And here's what's interesting. We live in an era of unprecedented safety in America, but you wouldn't know it, right? So I'm from Baltimore. In Baltimore in 1990, we reached our pinnacle. It was murder a day. It's a crack epidemic. We're not doing great still, but a lot better. Washington used to be called the murder capital. 400 murders a year as of 1990. Last year, they had 88.
That's incredible.
New York City, this year, has less murders than Baltimore. I mean, just in terms of brute numbers. And New York City is, I don't know how many million, Baltimore is only 600,000. So,
yeah, it's like
we are living in, so since the 1990s, it's becoming safer and safer and safer, but Americans feel more and more. And so I do cite in my book, Gallup polls, where Americans say year over year, is crime getting better or worse? Oh, it's worse. Oh, it's worse. Oh, it's worse. And the indicators are saying the opposite. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know what to do about that. I mean, you know, that's kind of media reform that has to happen within journalism itself. You know, interestingly enough, journalists are talking about how they can amend their ways in covering shootings so they don't inspire the next one. The guy in Oregon apparently was inspired by previous ones. And that's a little disarming. I should probably speak at a journalism school, too, because there's journalistic ethics that are at stake. They're basically saying maybe we need to censor what we say about these shootings. And that's troubling, too.
Yeah. Did you know that Wayne LaPierre failed the PhD program in political science here at Boston College? No, he did.
I knew he went here.
He passed his comprehensive, but never finished his thesis, so he couldn't get a job teaching at some small Catholic college.
I am so upset.
And he became president of the NRA instead.
I had fully intended to make that point myself. You stole my thunder. I was confused. I thought I went to law school, but that's fine. That's even better.
Yeah,
so I guess he's, I don't know if he's Catholic, though.
I assume so.
I
don't know. So those are all white people there.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
I'm sure you know that Adam Winkler points out that Reagan signed a gun control bill when he was governor of California.
Yeah.
Because at that time, guns were associated with the Black Panthers.
That's right.
Who had gone into the legislature in Sacramento. And
that's right.
Maybe the only hope is to get a lot more black people armed. And then they'll get like all afraid of it and want gun control.
Maybe.
Was Heller,
that might be happening.
Didn't the NRA set up Heller to be sympathetic to a black crime victim in Washington, D.C., because they wanted to make that point? I think
that I don't know.
I think they did. Because that was a test case.
Yeah.
It was all arranged. So, like, in any issue, like abortion, you try to get the most sympathetic victim.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they tried to play race.
It was a white victim of a black crime.
Yeah. Mm. Well, no, I actually think it was a black victim. I mean, that's the point.
They don't typically, you know, they say that they want black people armed, but they don't typically reach out to that population. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wayne LaPierre's speeches are full of veiled racism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not even that veiled, you know. Before Ferguson, he used to talk about the reason you should be armed is for riots. But what does that mean before Ferguson? That means Rodney King and... where I'm in Baltimore, the Martin Luther King riots. It's racist right there, you know, so they don't do that. But black people who have been reliable supporters of gun control are now changing their tune. And they are saying they're motivated a lot by the police shootings. Mm-hmm. But they are changing their tune. And interesting story.
I just see the NRA line up on their side, whatever LaPierre's racism, which I don't doubt. African Americans would be too good a coalition for gun rights to ignore.
I think so. But there's definitely a lot of mutual wariness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting when I have this discussion in African American audiences. It's different. It's interesting. In Baltimore, I have, you know, and it's a different tone, different interests, completely. And I mean from like the pro gun owners in the black community. They have different. They're not down with the NRA.
Well, thank you. And I'm coming at this talk, I guess, a lot of personal bias. So I am from South Texas, right mm-hmm. off the U.S.-Mexico border. Mm-hmm. And I first was taught how to shoot at the age of 5. Mm-hmm. And was raised with them in my home and, like, mm-hmm. trained to learn how to use them. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking of ways of trying to, like, reconcile my need for safety with... And in my hometown, it's not with the U.S. government. There were 2 murders in the past 5 years in my hometown, but there were 15,000 in the town across the border, which is 5 miles from where I am. Mm-hmm. And so ours is a safety from that end, like mm-hmm. a feeling that the U.S. government isn't going to be able to protect us from that, and so we have to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. But also with the community that dislike guns, and yes, my family does just like guns, but like... Trained to learn about actually how they were used, like the way the different bullets were fired, like the sure. dynamics of them and things like that. And like being able to like reconcile the craftsmanship and my need for safety with like a need for safety as a whole in the country. And do you think that can be reconciled?
I think so, but I say over and over again, you know, this is an interesting thing. When you critique the NRA, no matter what your criticism is, you are attacked for being anti-gun. Mm-hmm. And I have just given up trying to say anything contrary. I mean, I'm an East Coast liberal who teaches at an art school. What am I going to do? You know, and I don't have an American sounding name. My father's from Belgium. It's useless. But I don't mind guns at all. My dad used to have one for hunting. I love food. I love hunting. I love venison. What I say is I'm not against the Second Amendment per se. Although I would point out that America, which is the Jesuit magazine after San Diego, they wrote a very interesting article arguing that it should be repealed. And I thought that was really interesting that they did that. And then the editor of the Washington Post, Fred Hyatt, last month, again, he offered a piece. He suggested the same thing. I'm not saying that. I have no problem with guns in the home for guns for self-protection. I'm wondering about their intrusion and into public life, into the public sphere.
Right, and I'm just curious if that can be reconciled. A lot of my friends do.
Well, it used to be.
Do go to UT Austin, and when my boyfriend goes to school in Texas, and when open carry became like a thing, like there was a big conversation that we had. Because yeah. a lot of my friends go there, and that's something they are afraid of. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, if it was something that did happen, like what changed? How can we fix that? Because
I think the NRA is just, you know, it's interesting. Maybe this is a discussion for political science people to tell me about. But, you know, the NRA, you know, you see this with the various lobbies in D.C. Like, they don't moderate their own agendas. You know what I mean? They go for the gusto. Look at the bank lobbies. Look at the processed food lobbies. They go for everything. And the NRA is the same way. I think it's important. They're like, why am I apologizing for what I'm doing here? Why am I suggesting gun control legislation? Hell, I'm going to go for it. Guns everywhere. Guns in the class. Teachers. Kindergarten teachers should be armed, right? There's nothing he can't say. And people say, oh, that's very provocative, you know? And so I think there's part of that. But it wasn't that long ago. Really, 10, 15 years ago, we had a very different dynamic in this country where the guns were in the home. By the way, here's an interesting statistic. While the number of privately owned guns has skyrocketed, the number of homes with a gun in them is steadily decreasing. Since the 1970s, it's fallen by like a third. What does that mean?
What does that mean? Does that mean multiple guns are taken?
Yeah. Multiple, like...
individual
one
families.
One person has like seven guns.
There you go. It's that.
Stockpile.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Stockpiling. And every time there's a shooting, they run out to buy more. It's like, oh, gun control's coming. So, I think it is definitely reconcilable. Guns in the home. I think the Canadian model is to be commended. Guns in a lockbox. You can have your weapons, but make sure they're secured. By the NRA, by the way, the NRA fights that too. They fight. Massachusetts is the only state in the country that has secure storage laws, and they're not even monitored. It's ridiculous. And the NRA's fought that, and they fought gun safety technology, which would make weapons that could only be fired by their owner. NRA has cut that as well. I think all of that is perfectly doable. You know, and then I would urge us to reduce and diminish the profile of guns in the public sphere. Open carry is a bad idea. Concealed carry, I think, is a bad idea. And I think campus carry is a terrible idea. So, you can like guns and have all that. Why not? Why not?
I think there's an interesting, like, a stark difference between how rural communities and suburban communities view guns versus people who are from cities.
Yeah.
And I think it strikes your point of, like, if I'm walking down the street and I have to think, this person might have a gun, and maybe if I just brush shoulders with them, they're going to pull it on me and shoot me. If I lived like that in New York, like, I wouldn't be able to go outside.
Yeah.
Or in downtown Boston,
right,
or Baltimore. And so I think there's something to be said of just the dynamic of where people live and how it affects...
It is.
...their ideas about guns.
Totally. I mean, I don't know how to go about responding to what you say. There's a lot there. I mean, yeah, that's striking to see. I mean, well, I always make this point, I said it to you earlier, you know, where traditionally and historically the highest levels of gun control support are in the African-American community. Well, we should pay attention to that. That's very telling. Because in Baltimore City, they're the ones dying on the front lines of this. And they want the gun control. Well, we should listen. And out in the hinterlands around Baltimore, you know, where they have their guns, well, you know, I guess my message would be your safety is not due to that gun. Not exclusively.
It's
and not even,
not, being
not even principally. Not even principally. It's this thing called rule of law. You know, and where, you know where they don't have rule of law? West Baltimore. They don't have rule of law in West Baltimore. And so, if you know anything about Baltimore, the show The Wire was made about Baltimore, and there's this one character, Omar, who everybody loves, who walks down the street with his sawed off. Guess what? No one in West Baltimore walks down the street with a sawed off. Do you know why? Because that means right away you're target number one. You'll be shot dead, right? And so what's interesting, I've read all these stories about open carry proponents who walk into Starbucks in Colorado with their guns. Why are you safe, sir? I'm safe because of my gun on my hip. Well, I don't know if I can say this here, but bullshit, you know? I mean, that's... No. No, and in fact, you're endangering the rule of law that we all enjoy by carrying that weapon around. And then you couple that with stand your ground, and you're in deep doo-doo. You know?
And how about, you know, mental illness and background checks? What's been the opposition to that?
Well, I have a lot of things to say to that, too. First of all, I would say the NRA, this is a convenient cover. After a mass shooting, the NRA is happy to talk about mental illness, but they won't talk about the guns. Psychiatrists, they repeat over and over again, the vast majority of these of mentally ill are not violent. They're not. I would also say there's mental illness in other countries. You don't have these mass shootings perpetrated by them. See, you're making these weapons readily available to people who might do something with them. You know, I mean, and the other thing is this, very interesting story I saw in North Carolina recently. So, you know, the NRA says, hey, you know, just make sure the mentally ill don't get their hands on them. And so, you know, the state said, well, go to police and get the police and get your background check done. And the police said, you want me to adjudicate this person's mental health. Hello, primary physician. Guess what the physician said? No. And they said no because they said, well, first of all, being doctors, they said liability. And then they said, and you're hearing this over and over again, it is really hard to diagnose that thing and then determine the next step, which is that that person's going to do something with a gun. How do you know that? Well, then the obvious solution is we just need to reduce the number of guns and the availability of them. Because like I said, other countries around the world have similar degrees of mental illness, and they don't have these kinds of massacres perpetrated by them, you know. So I'm not optimistic that can ever be done. Of course, on its face, the NRA would love to hear that.
What is the NRA's opposition to background checks, just in general?
They say, they have a couple things they say. But there's one saying in particular they like to offer, which is, you know, you're not going to stop bad guys getting their hands on guns. I say to that, okay, but you know we're not even trying? We're not even trying right now. It doesn't seem reason not to try. And guess what? The other point is we can definitely do a lot of work reducing their ability to get their hands on guns. Of course, you're never going to completely. Like, Norway has very strong gun laws. And that guy got a gun, and he perpetrated the mask. Okay, that will happen. But it makes no sense to take the opposite approach and just open the floodgates because bad guys are going to get their hands on guns. The NRA is enabling criminals to get their hands on guns. That's the line I would like to take.
Well,
they are enabling
surveillance,
it.
Of course. I mean, about being pegged as...
oh, sorry, yes, there's also that.
When you have an essential right, you shouldn't be tracked for exercising it. Like, we don't have church rolls who say who shows up here and there, or if we have a freedom of assembly, we shouldn't need to register our name to go protest. And so they would say that you shouldn't have to register your name to own a gun. It's a fundamental right that shouldn't be tracked or restricted, you know.
Right. No, that's
so
true. And that fits in neatly also with the political arguments I was dealing with earlier. That is true. And yet, this leads to an interesting discussion about what exactly, you know, this kind of commodity is. You know, for example, a lot of people have been arguing that, you know, we should be treating gun safety like automobile safety. You know, that's a public health issue, and we track that, and we have government databases on that. Why can't we do it with guns?
Yeah, because you have to have a license to drive.
And insurance. You have to have insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people are arguing, you know. But again, like, these political arguments, you know, while I think they're, you know, they're dubious, they do a lot of damage, and they really advance the cause of absolutist gun rights very well, you know. They undermine background checks, which 90% of Americans want, you know?
2 years ago at this time, we were working to improve the gun safety laws in Massachusetts. And I was one of the people at the State House that gave testimony. And besides the fact that the NRA people were some of the ugliest people I've ever seen, it was just shocking. Their arguments were Second Amendment and general right to bear arms, safety, and you're putting more onerous aspects on honest gun owners,
mm-hmm.
as well as we should close loopholes in our current laws before we develop new laws. And that was also related directly to the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
My thing that I cannot figure out, and we didn't. I'm part of the Mass Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence, and we were working with a number of groups to improve our gun laws. But one of the things that I have yet to be able to figure out is the strong sense of control that the NRA has on our politicians on a nationwide basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would like to think that they are fewer in number than I am.
They are.
But their power seems to be multiple times their number.
They represent a minority of gun owners, actually. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. You know, so I'll give you an example. So in the state of Wisconsin, Marquette ran a poll a few years ago saying that 88% of I don't know what you call people from Wisconsin. Wisconsinites?
Wisconsins. Jesus.
Wisconians.
Yeah.
I was on an NPR show in Wisconsin and I didn't know what to call them. So I said, people from Wisconsin. People from Wisconsin, 88% of them favored universal background checks. At the state level. Not the federal, but at the state level. They don't even have them at the state level in Wisconsin. And Governor Walker said, predictably, no. He said that should come from the federal government. Now, wait a minute. He's a small government. He is a small government Republican. In any case, whatever. And he rebuffed that, and everybody said, well, why are you, you know, that doesn't make any sense. But then he got an A-plus rating from the NRA. That's more important.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
He got an A-plus rating from the NRA.
The governor.
Yes, as a candidate.
For what?
For this, for fighting back on the universal background check. So it is very important for conservative candidates to have an A-plus rating from the NRA because that is part of their, you know, it's like a stamp of approval. Like, this is an honest-to-God conservative, and you know it because it is an A-plus rating from the NRA. In our debate in Maryland, we just had elections where Governor Larry Hogan won. He's a Republican. He's a moderate Republican. But he got an A rating from the NRA, and everybody said, what? How does he have an A rating? What did he do? And the Baltimore Sun had an editorial, but you don't know what he did, but he got an A rating. It's something they look for, you know. There's something instinctual at this point about the gun rights issue that you just want to see. Here's an interesting dynamic. If you ask people how they feel about specific gun rights measures, like, how do you feel about universal background checks? Oh, I'm for them. How do you feel about gun control? I hate it. And so I liken it to the Obamacare issue. If you ask them about specific provisions, they say, oh, yeah, I'm in favor of that provision. Oh, I like that provision too. How do you feel about Obamacare? Hate it.
So it's all how it's framed then.
It is how it's framed. It's again, I think it's symptomatic of this period that we're in right now. I think a lot of it has to do with hatred of this president.
What is Obama's rating by the NRA? Do you know?
Probably an F.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he's really
Has he been able to pass anything?
He has done executive moves.
But every time he says he's going to do something, it doesn't seem like it happens.
Well, he was very disappointed after Sandy Hook, and very distraught and very upset about that. And he said recently over the summer, right? He said, my single greatest failing as president was that I did not enact stronger gun control. And that's why he said after Oregon, he says, I'm going to come out of here every time after shooting and I'm going to say this. So he has a couple of things at his disposal that he can do at the executive level, but not as much as he can do without Congress.
But again, it's a neuralgic issue. I mean, something bad happens, you want to be safe, right? And so,
of course.
And so it's not effective to say to a group of people who want to be safe that guns are bad. I mean, there's got to be another conversation that is different about how to be safe.
Excellent.
You know?
That's why I think, you know, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, it's weird. Other countries have the dynamic goes a different direction.
Right.
There's a shooting. Oh my God, I better get rid of guns.
Right.
Here, there's a shooting. Oh my God, I better buy a gun. That's fascinating in itself. The other thing I would say is, which is why, you know, I was trying to build up here towards the end of my talk, which is, I think that, you know, if this guns are symptomatic of a sense of powerlessness and loss of autonomy and loss of political relevance, then I think we could gain a lot in amending this issue if we solved those larger political issues and economic issues. And that's not easy.
Right.
But I think Citizens United is a big problem. Big problem. That tells them that their political voice means nothing. You know? And there's other issues. I mean, you know, the demographic that's principally in the boat of the NRA is they have a lot of social grievances, you know? And I think if they can feel better about those social grievances, that would do a lot, I think, to help us move in some kind of more productive direction here. You know?
And you rarely hear of people actually defending themselves against like a stranger or someone breaking into your house. Like I just was saying, like I never hear of those stories.
Oh,
in the news.
If you Google them, you'll find them. The NRA will tell you. Call them. They have a list.
Why are they never in the news? Like why is that not a story? Like someone broke into the house and they were protected by shooting the person or whatever. Like why do we never hear those stories? Like are they simply not happening or? It's fascinating.
Well, you just hit on a very sensitive issue, actually. I'll have you know. The gun rights people have plenty of stories.
So they're saying that...
They're doubling over backwards to give you stories. I was in a conversation with a guy at the pool this summer, a neighbor of mine, and he said to me, he just bought a gun. And I was like, oh boy, do you know what I just wrote? And he was oblivious to me. He's very off on the right wing, and he says... Well, you know, there was this time, there was this woman up in the county near Baltimore, you know, guy drove in her driveway with an assault weapon. She pulled her gun out in the kitchen and shot him dead. And you hear these things.
Yeah.
And the police chief in Baltimore County, his name is James Johnson. He's actually a national leader in law enforcement in favor of gun control. He testified against Wayne LaPierre in Congress. I met him a couple times. And I put that question to him once, and he said, you know, he says, I hear that from the NRA all the time. So we did a study. And we had a really hard time finding incidences in Baltimore County, which is a big jurisdiction. I think it's the 19th biggest in the country, of cases where citizens had defended themselves with a weapon. You know, so, and, but there, you know, I think there's a lot of manufacturing that goes into that, and it's a very dubious.
No, it's very simple. The Jews in Nazi Germany had guns. They wouldn't kill the Palestinian who was telling Hitler to experiment with the Jews.
All right, then there's Ben Carson. Ben Carson is very illuminating on this issue.
But I think it's also just nonsensical, because when you have a gun in your home, it's more likely that you're going to use it on yourself, or if you don't keep it locked up, that one of your children are going to get to it and by accident shoot each other. I think my grandfather had a cousin who was shot in some kind of gun accident like that when they were kids.
Well, I mean, this is where the public health research is very helpful, because they point out, Daniel Webster from Hopkins has it in his book, is very clear. Gun ownership in a home, it leads to higher incidences of gun violence in the home, unintentional. Gun rights people like to say, oh, I have a solution for domestic abuse. Arm the wives that are being abused. And the public health researchers say, actually, the data tell me that when a woman has a gun in the home, it is used against her more often than against her attacker. And the New York Times did a chilling study last year about childhood deaths at the hands of guns and how many states around the country they do a lot of dissimulation in reporting them.
Really?
Yeah. Because they don't want it to get out. Mm-hmm. You know what's going on here. The NRA is fighting safe storage laws. Mm-hmm. You know. But that's valuable, you know, but I think that's an argument more in favor of safe storage.
But even if you had safe storage, then what's the chance that I'll actually be able to get to my gun in time to...
Well, now you're thinking of Jim Jeffries.
Yeah, I am. Because it is ridiculous that I would... Someone's breaking into my home. They're probably not trying to kill me, right? They're probably... I mean, why would anyone break into a home? Usually
you
steal
something.
You don't
know that, so why take a chance, right?
That's true.
Well, they probably... I mean...
Why not assume the worst?
It's property. It's not just about your own safety. It's about your property.
Well, why not assume the worst? I mean, you probably watched, like, HBO's Dexter before going to bed. Or The Wire.
Yeah.
Right? Reach out, wish for your gun under your pillow, and blast away. Right?
Yeah.
And those are the arguments that the NRA gives. Why should we not have safe storage laws? Because I need my weapon loaded and ready in my bedstand next to me. And what do you say to that argument? I mean, well, yes. I mean, I guess you're right. On the other hand, that means your children have access to that weapon as well.
That's where the technological solution seems so
promising. I agree with you. I agree
and
with you.
It's unclear. I mean, I understand it's not perfect yet because they haven't had the funds. They've been banned by some governments in investigating it and things like this. But if you were to put a palm grip or a thumb print or some sort of identification device on your weapon that's rendered unusable without it, it seems to be so such an easy step forward toward the public safety issue that it's unclear to me why there's not a rush of people and the manufacturers make a ton of money selling quote-unquote safe weapons. And so that's another frustrating NRA thing.
It is.
Where they've stopped that.
They're ready. I mean, the manufacturers are ready.
Right.
And they have blackballed dealers who would like to sell them.
Right.
And it's not clear why.
Right.
Well, I actually think we need to bring this to a formal close, but can you stick around a couple minutes anyway?
Of course, yeah.
And
I'm not done
eating. There's more food in the kitchen. Help yourselves.
Thank you.